Papa sat on the bench in the barn, his broken leg stretched awkwardly before him, mending one of Jack's harnesses. He had been there since early morning, a frown line carved deep into his forehead, quietly mending those things which needed mending. Mama told us not to bother him, and we stayed away from the barn as long as we could. But by late afternoon, we drifted naturally to it and began our chores. Papa had disappeared within himself, and he took no notice of us at first. But shortly afterward, he looked up, watching us closely. When the chores were almost finished, Mr. Morrison arrived from Strawberry, where he had gone to make the August mortgage payment. He entered the barn slowly and handed Papa an envelope. Papa glanced up questioningly, then ripped it open. As he read the letter, his jaw set tightly, and when he finished, he smashed his fist so hard against the bench that the boys and I stopped what we were doing, aware that something was terribly wrong. "They tell you?" he asked of Mr. Morrison, his voice curt, angry. Mr. Morrison nodded. "I tried to get them to wait till after cotton picking, but they told me it was due and payable immediately. Them's their words." "Harlan Granger," said Papa quietly. He reached for his cane and stood up. "You feel up to going back to Strawberry tonight?"
"I can make it, but I don't know if this old mule can."
"Then hitch Lady to it," he said, motioning to the mare. He turned then and went to the house. The boys and I followed, not quite sure of what was happening. Papa entered the kitchen. We stayed on the porch, peering through the screen.
"David, something the matter, son?" "The bank called up the note. I'm going to Strawberry."
"Called up the note?" echoed Big Ma. "Oh, Lord, not that too." Mama stared at Papa, fear in her eyes. "You going now?"
"Now," he said, leaving the kitchen for their room.
Mama's voice trailed him. "David, it's too late. The bank's closed by now. You can't see anyone until morning." We couldn't hear Papa's reply, but Mama's voice rose sharply. "You want to be out on that road again in the middle of the night after what happened? You want us worried to death about you?"
"Mary, don't you understand they're trying to take the land?" Papa said, his voice rising too so that we heard.
"Don't you understand I don't want you dead?" We could hear nothing else. But a few minutes later, Papa came out and told Mr. Morrison to unhitch Lady. They would go to Strawberry in the morning. The next day, Papa and Mr. Morrison were gone before I arose. When they returned in the late afternoon, Papa sat wearily down at the kitchen table with Mr. Morrison beside him. Rubbing his hand over his thick hair, he said,
"I called Hammer."
"What did you tell him?" Mama asked.
"Just that the note's been called. He said he'd get the money."
"How?"
"He didn't say, and I didn't ask. Just said he'd get it."
"And Mr. Higgins at the bank, David," said Big Ma. "What'd he have to say?"
"Said our credit's no good anymore."
"We aren't even hurting the Wallaces now," Mama said with acid anger. "Harlan Granger's got no need."
"Baby, you know he's got a need," Papa said, pulling her to him. "He's got a need to show us where we stand in the scheme of things. He's got a powerful need to do that. Besides, he still wants this place."
"But son, that mortgage give us 4 more years. Papa laughed dryly.
"Mama, you want me to take it to court?"
Big Ma sighed and placed her hand on Papa's. "What if Hammer can't get the money?" Papa didn't look at her, but at Mr. Morrison instead.
"Don't worry, Mama. We ain't gonna lose the land. Trust me."
On the third Sunday of August, the annual revival began. Revivals were always very serious, yet gay and long-planned-for affairs, which brought pots and pans from out-of-the-way shelves, mothball-packed dresses and creased pants from hidden chests, and all the people from the community and the neighboring communities up the winding red school road to Great Faith Church. The revival ran for 7 days, and it was an occasion everyone looked forward to, for it was more than just church services. It was the year's only planned social event, disrupting the humdrum of everyday country life. Teenagers courted openly. Adults met with relatives and friends they hadn't seen since the previous year's big meeting, and the children ran almost free. As far as I was concerned, the best part of the revival was the very first day. After the first of three services was dismissed, the mass of humanity, which had squished its way into the sweltering interior of the small church, poured onto the school grounds, and the women proudly set out their dinners in the backs of wagons and on the long tables circling the church. Then it was a feast to remember. Brimming bowls of turnip greens and black-eyed peas with ham hocks, thick slices of last winter's sugar-cured ham, and strips of broiled ribs, crisply fried chicken, and morsels of golden squirrel and rabbit, flaky buttermilk biscuits and crusty cornbread, fat slabs of sweet potato pie and butter pound cakes, and so much more were all for the taking. No matter how low the pantry supplies, each family always managed to contribute something, and as the churchgoers made the rounds from table to table, hard times were forgotten, at least for the day. The boys and I had just loaded our plates for the first time and taken seats under an old walnut when Stacy put down his plate and stood up again. "What's the matter?" I asked, stuffing my mouth with cornbread. Stacy frowned into the sun. "That man walking up the road." I took a moment to look up, then picked up my drumstick. "So? He looks like Uncle Hammer," he cried and dashed away. I hesitated, watching him, reluctant to leave my plate unless it really was Uncle Hammer. When Stacy reached the man and hugged him, I put the plate down and ran across the lawn to the road. Christopher John, with his plate still in hand, and Little Man ran after me. "Uncle Hammer, where's your car?" Little Man asked after we all had hugged him. "Sold it," he said.
"Sold it?"
we cried in unison.
But
why? Asked Stacy.
Needed the money, Uncle Hammer said flatly.
As we neared the church, Papa met us and embraced Uncle Hammer.
"I wasn't expecting you to come all the way down here. You expect me to send that much money by mail?"
"Could have wired it."
"Don't trust that either."
"How'd you get it?"
"Borrowed some of it, sold a few things," he said with a shrug.
Then he nodded toward Papa's leg.
"How'd you do that?"
Papa's eyes met Uncle Hammer's and he smiled faintly.
"I was sort of hoping you wouldn't ask that."
"Uh-huh."
"Papa," I said, "Uncle Hammer sold the packet."
Papa's smile faded.
"I didn't mean for that to happen, Hammer."
Uncle Hammer put his arm around Papa.
"What good's a car? It can't grow cotton. You can't build a home on it. And you can't raise four fine babies in it."
Papa nodded, understanding.
"Now, you gonna tell me about that leg?"
Papa stared at the milling throng of people around the dinner tables.
"Let's get you something to eat first," he said.
"Then I'll tell you. Maybe it'll set better with some of this good food in your stomach."